Patrick Henningsen and TNT.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to TNT Today's News Talk. I'm Patrick Henningsen, your host. We're cruising into the third hour of this live broadcast. Thank you so much for staying with us. And a tremendous segment before the break with our guest, a former CIA agent, Kent Clinsby. And it was good to get Kent's perspective on some of these issues, especially Ukraine, but even more so how it's perceived in the media and how the political establishment in the United States is handling this issue, and, you know, not very well by the looks of it. And I'm very worried about where this is going, especially from Washington's perspective. So, you know, we're keeping a close eye on Ukraine, as we always do, and hopefully we'll be able to have a different conversation related to that with Kent in the future. That's something to look forward to. Now, we're going to change gears now, and we're going to go back into the world of science or pseudoscience or medicine, or I don't know if we can call it medicine. It's become something else recently. COVID-19 vaccines. This has really been the subject that's dominated everybody's life for the past 2.5 years. And if you're looking at the headlines now, especially in the UK, they're ramping up COVID cases. They're saying, oh, there's alarm going through. The UK has a new agency. It's called the UK Health Security Agency. It's like the Department of Homeland Security, but for viruses. Okay, that's all we need, of course. So to fight the war on terror against microbes, we need this new agency, and their job is biosurveillance. And I can't imagine what tools they'd have to be conducting biosurveillance. But our next guest, we're going to be talking about this plus many other things. He's the voice of some great independent documentaries. One of them we featured up at 21stCenturyWired.com. It's called The End of Germ Theory. You know where we're going right now, and we're going to be welcoming on the show Steve Falconer on the line right now, and hopefully he's there. Are you there, Steve?
I am, Patrick, and I'm a big fan of yours, so I really appreciate you finding the work, watching it, and taking the time to track me down and talk to me. It's an honor.
No, thank you. Thank you for joining us. And it's just a happenstance that we have some mutual colleagues and friends, and they put us in touch with each other. And I'm very pleased because, you know, I had watched some of your films, or at least I know your voice from some of the other films that, you know, at the moment, at least this one, I don't think this would survive the YouTube censorship machine, but it's definitely on Odyssey, playing very well there. I think I might have seen it on Rumble.
Trending on BitChute, it made the monthly trending now, so it'll be there for 3 more weeks on the top. So BitChute's really our bigger channel.
Okay. Yeah. Space Busters is the channel, right?
Yes.
So Space Busters, and I love the iconography there with this the spaceman. So The End of Germ Theory, and, you know, you've definitely opened a lot of people's eyes with these films, Steve. And there's a big debate right now. There's a big schism, especially in the alternative media and alternative circles coming out of the pandemic. Everyone's staking their position on, you know, how best to fight this hostile takeover by the establishment. You know, which tact are you going to take? And it becomes a kind of a nuanced debate. Some people are saying, no, don't talk about germ theory and terrain theory, because, you know, the Overton window hasn't extended that far. And, you know, we can't talk about that because people say, you can't say viruses don't exist. It's too much. Nobody's, you know, it's going to cause a huge rift in the debate and so forth. So, but you're right out there on the edge of that debate, and you have been for quite some time. So firstly, just give us a short synopsis of your background in life, and what brought you to sort of take a look at this particular issue and got you to the point where you're involved in making independent films about it.
Sure, absolutely. And I think the point you just made is correct. I see both sides of that argument before I do that, because if you know what Agenda 21 is, and I'm sure all of your listeners do, you know that they're using this virus thing as the vehicle through medical tyranny to bring it about. So I come from the side of this germ theory fight that if we want to stop this, we have to debunk this now so they can't use it. However, as you know, they're just going to go to climate change, or some, you know, plan B or C. So this doesn't stop that either. It just, it halts it for a while. But, you know, they have other roads. But for me, it's not only that. It's more important because they're forcing people to put this stuff in them, you know, as you said, or lose your job or don't travel or do this and that. So this is dangerous for people's health, not just for the future of where the world's going. So I do this for individual people who want to look into this and maybe save their own life or their own health. You know, that's my motivation for this. But anyway, yeah, I'm just a regular guy. My first introduction to medical background, I'm not medically educated. I went to school for communications, but I did spend my entire 20s in working for the biggest healthcare company in the United States. And then, so I was an insider there. And then later I switched to private insurance, where we were, you know, dealing with group medical and life insurance, malpractice, disability. So I was kind of on the inside. And then during that time, strangely enough, my father had taken a flu shot on a business trip, and I was living downtown. He was about an hour away in the suburbs. And you know, when you just get this intuition, I hadn't heard from him, and this was before cell phones. So something told me I had to, I don't know why, I just got in my car and drove out to my dad's house. I kicked in the door because he wasn't answering, but his car was out front, and he was on the couch with three pots and pans and buckets full of vomit and urine and feces, and he was dying. So I threw him over my shoulder, took him to the hospital, and they flew some like eight specialists in from around the United States. They didn't know what was wrong with him, and then diagnosed him with adult onset juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, which is like rare. I don't know, 1 in 400,000 people, which is also one of the vaccine side effects on Pfizer's new vaccine, but we'll get to that later. And it's probably normally a juvenile disease because juveniles get so many vaccines within the first few months or years of their life. So then when I had my own children, you know, I started diving in and thinking like, do I want to vaccinate my kids after what my dad went through? Because he's still on steroids to this day, because he won't seek any naturopathic or alternative cures. You know, he's an old school guy who believes in this medical system. So I just did like most people, you know, I went back to Jenner, who's the beginning of at least the Western understanding of the germ theory, and just started reading all the books and all the literature I could. And to my horror, I couldn't find any proof that there was such a thing. And then I ran into around 2011, my friend Amanda Vollmer, who's a doctor of naturopathy. And we started talking a lot about this. At the same time, I also had a newspaper on a website called truthserumnews.com, which is still up. And we had a Facebook newspaper of the same name that got kicked off. So I was writing articles about this and also esoteric biochemistry. I was just getting into biochemistry through all this. So I've kind of been talking about this for many years. And then my best friend had this YouTube channel. He started Space Busters, Ross, not me. And it got really, he did a few big videos that got us advertising and revenue. So I thought, well, this is really fun. You know, I would like to, I'm good at writing, but I really enjoy film, you know, the filmmaking. I did a few with him. So I decided to switch over to make films. And then all this COVID happened. And because I had been studying this, you know, for well over a decade, I thought, well, I'm the guy to come forward and do this because I can make films. I have a communications degree. So a lot of times you hear these doctors talking, and to them, people like Dr. Kaufman or Cowan, you know, to them, they're simplifying things from their own medical understanding. But to the average person, they still don't understand what they're saying. So I thought, could I explain this stuff to a 10-year-old? And use visuals, you know, and audio and things. So I started making films doing that, and they got really popular, and here we are today.
No, and your background in the insurance business, and, you know, for people who don't live in the United States, I know that, you know, Europeans, many of them have, you know, socialized healthcare or part socialized healthcare. They don't understand the size and the power of the United States medical insurance conglomerates, the industry, the amount of power they wield, the sums of money they're dealing with, the influence they have over actual point of care service, whether you get it or not, whether they're going to pay for it or not. I've had my run-ins with them. You know, I've been on my death's door and they've turned around and accused me of having a pre-existing condition, and then I'm stuck with $15,000 worth of medical bills that I couldn't pay. That's happened to me. But that's nothing compared to stories I've heard from other people that have paid into the system for years, paid their deductibles. And then when it comes to getting the insurance company to pay out. So what that taught me, Steve, is that the institutional corruption at that level is so vast, and that they can't, people say they couldn't get it wrong across the entire system. And I'm saying, no, they can get it wrong right across the entire system. And so what's been your experience? I mean, was that an eye opener working in that industry?
Not only is it an eye opener, it's the reason inevitably that I got out, because it was crushing my soul. One of the earlier, I almost cried thinking back on it. It's painful, but one of the earlier jobs I had was, liaising between the agents and our underwriters for small groups, businesses with maybe under 50 employees or whatever. Now, if you've got a large company with 20,000 people in America, a lot of times they don't care if there's a cancer or something serious like that, because there's so much premium coming in that it'll cover it. But with these small groups, they do exactly like you said. They say, okay, yeah, we'll cover everything, but if you already have cancer and start this company, we aren't going to cover that. And I thought, well, what is the point of insurance? The whole point is that we all pool our money together so we can pay this person's cancer. Isn't that the point of insurance?
I thought it was, yeah.
And then, you look at the quarterly profits this company was making. It was ridiculous. I mean, billions a year, And you're saying, wait, we can't do that. And then I had friends who were, because I was liaising with the underwriters and the claims people, so they were denying these people, especially like you say, sometimes people lie about a pre-existing condition or something comes up that changes, and because of the way the medical industry is, they say, oh no, that's related to that. You lied and said you didn't have that, and you say, yeah, but it's not, you're saying that now. And I had to call so many people, and their families destroyed and ruined, and I was like the guy who had to give them the bad news, like, we're not going to pay your claim. And so I've seen your story. You can't even imagine how many thousands of times. And then those who did have valid claims, they'd be calling, complaining. They've been trying to get their claim paid for a year or two, and they're making them fill out, 30 pages of paperwork and resend this and that. And no, you didn't do this. And no, not, and it's almost like even when you have a valid claim, they won't pay it. And I just saw this time and time and time again, and so many lives destroyed while I'm sitting in an ivory tower, going to elaborate functions and things like that. What people don't understand is we were getting bribed too. We had big pharma and big tobacco bribing our health insurance companies. I got taken to a function once, it was big tobacco, they were giving us lobster dinner, champagne, and then you got these coupons to go around and get 50 Cuban cigars. But you weren't even allowed to have Cuban cigars in the 90s. That was, there was a trade embargo. I don't know if that's still on with Cuba, but so they're like, yeah, but we're not selling them to you. We're giving them to you. So, every time a big bill would come up, like Hillary Clinton had tried to pass her version of Obamacare back then, we were getting bribed by them too. So it's not even just health insurance. All of them are in on it together, scratching each other's backs when it's not even beneficial to one of the companies. You would think a medical company wouldn't want to be paying claims on smokers, right? Or drug injuries, but they do anyway. It's like they're all the same guys sitting on the same boards, scratching each other's back. As George Carlin said, it's a big club and you and I ain't in it,
Oh yeah. Yeah. Gosh, we need George Carlin now more than ever. We can always look at his old videos that live in perpetuity, but I'm here with Steve Falconer. He is a narrator and the voice of Space Busters in many ways, but The End of Germ Theory is his latest creation. Look, we're going to take a short break here with TNT and we'll be right back to go deeper into the world of viruses. COVID-19, we'll start there and work our way around. I'm Patrick Henningsen, your host. This is TNT, Today's News Talk.
Shannon Joy on TNT Radio.
And Alex Berenson, I think, has the idea. I think he has the right idea as to why this is happening, why the FDA is doing this. And it is because the media propaganda, government officials, Anthony Fauci, they have so traumatized a subset of American parents, woke leftists, people with the Ukraine banner in their profile on Facebook, people with the double masks on or the triple masks, people who have been triple jabbed, double jabbed, cult members, the true believers. They have destroyed their children's lives. They will not let their kids out of their buildings. They haven't seen family and friends for months. These people still exist. They're putting pressure on the FDA. They want this for the children so that they can give it to the children because they truly believe it will save them, and then they can have their lives back.
Shannon Joy on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
In this day and age, everybody deserves the right to access phone and internet services. Whether you're from regional, rural, or remote Australia, the Regional Tech Hub can independently assist with providing advice on connectivity options in your local area, or work with you and your service provider to resolve outstanding issues with phone and internet. And our service is absolutely free. Find out more by visiting regionaltechhub.org.au or by calling 1300 081 029. RTH is an initiative of the Australian Government, delivered by the NFF.
Emergency, police, fire or ambulance?
Yeah, I'm just passing through.
Police, fire or ambulance?
I can see a whole lot of smoke.
What town are you calling from?
I'm on a mobile phone.
I need the town.
Yeah, there it is. I can see flames. Appears to be a kid or something at the window.
It's okay.
You guys are better out. This is serious.
Hello?
Triple Zero's sole job is to connect you to emergency services. If you stay focused and just answer the prompted questions, you'll get help faster.
There's no dispute. The jabs are not safe or effective. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to TNT Today's News Talk. I'm Patrick Henningsen, your host. We're cruising into the third hour well and truly here today on this Tuesday live broadcast. And we're joined by a very special guest. His name is Steve Falconer. I'm going to call him now today a whistleblower of sorts from the medical industrial complex. But in recent years, he has become the voice of Spacebusters, their latest creation, The End of Germ Theory. Now, Steve, when I saw this film, this was sent to us by mutual colleagues. I do have a look at that. I'd seen some of your work before, very effective, but this one is so well put together and it's so thorough. The research is excellent, and anybody, even just by watching it without the links, they can derive the sources, a lot of them just by looking at what's on screen. But so it's taken you on a journey here, and I've always told people, you know, there's a lot of people that would, you know, they think something's not quite right with the numbers, you know, the case numbers, and you've got people arguing about, well, you know, we shouldn't be in lockdown because, you know, the case numbers have dropped. And I'm saying to people myself, think, well, you know, why are you using the parameters, their parameters of data to describe the situation? And they said, well, the PCR test, I've got sick, I tested positive, so there must be something to the test, is what they're saying to me, Steve. Like the lateral flow, my whole family's sick, you know, and they're all tested positive, so there must be something to this COVID thing. There's COVID out there. Well, maybe it's not as serious. It's more like the flu. It's more like the flu. It's not. We don't deserve to be locked down. We shouldn't have borders closed. It's just the flu. And you're taking it a step further. You're saying, look, it's what is the flu? You're asking the fundamental question. What is the flu? What is a virus? And you're challenging the assumptions that underpin all of this data that we're swimming in.
But yeah, that's one of the biggest things you see. And, you know, actually, this is all controlled. This is not an accident that people are having this argument. You see this all the time with the mask debate. They give you A and B to talk about, just like the Democrats and Republicans. Anywhere you go, it's, you know, Christians, Jew, whatever. They give you two choices to argue about, but never choice 3 through 25. You know what I mean? So masks are effective. No, they don't work. Well, either argument is true. There's no such thing as an airborne contagious virus. So whether you wear a mask or not, both are equally effective. They stop a virus because there is no virus. But that's not the debate. You know what I mean? They leave that part out. And, you know, so this is a very controlled argument. They don't want you talking about what we're talking about. It's the same with the lockdowns. They don't work. They do work. Well, there's nothing to work against. There isn't a virus. There's no, as you and I were talking about off air, in fact, I have them here. I have, they've been keeping the world death mortality rate since 1950. And this is done every year. And what's exciting about you and I talking, I've been waiting for the 2022 to come out because they weren't released when I made all my films, and they're out now. Now, in 2021 and 2020, the way they do this, it's all the known people in the world divided by the known deaths. So they do it by the number of people who die per 1,000 people. In 2020, when we allegedly this pandemic started, it was 7.6 people per 1,000 died in the world. They don't say of what, but that's just how many. 2021, 7.64, 2019, 7.57. So it's always the same. And even as you get back to the 1980s, or even the early 2000s, 2009, it's 7.9, 8, 8, 9, 10. You get back to the 1950s, it's almost 20 people per 1,000. So it's almost three times as much. Mm-hmm. So you have to say, if there was this deadly pandemic and all these people are dying, why didn't we see it in the mortality rates? Why are they lower than several previous years? You know, where was the pandemic in 2017 that had higher death rates, you know? And people don't ask those questions. Another trick they did, because we get into that later, and you can see in the film, PCR tests can't detect any such thing as a virus. They're looking for common tiny genetic fragments in everyone's snot. And if you amplify them enough times, it's basically making copies. It makes de novo sequences, so you can find anything in anyone, because 98% of the test is created by spinning it 40 cycles or doubling it. You know, so what they were doing is hospitals were giving these corpses a PCR test at 40 cycles, which is going to create a 98% fake genetic match to what it's testing for and give you a positive. And they never on any of the death certificates wrote that you died from COVID. It was with. So the first cause of death was some kind of respiratory pneumonia, some kind of, you know, respiratory failure. Then second or third was COVID. But the hospitals were being paid, in America at least, sometimes $30,000 or $40,000 or seven per patient and then more for a death to mark the death certificate with this COVID on it. But never once will you find it as the primary cause. So that's how they were driving their numbers. And then another scam they used, as you and I talked about off air, if anyone notices the flu, which is also, there's no PCR test that can detect the flu, it's not a virus, but every year they reset the flu stats. So you can go look at 2019's flu stats and maybe 650,000 people died, and then 2020 and 2017, it resets. But what do you call it, the parking meter? If you look at the COVID counter, it's still running since, you know, January, whatever, 2020. So it looks really scary because it doesn't reset. It's the total of 2.5 years now. But if you had done that with the flu counters, it would look the same.
Yeah, the ominous milestones. And the media does this. We've reached an ominous milestone this week. 1 million COVID deaths. And they use that to as a demagoguery stick to whack any opposition over the head with, saying, oh, that's, look at 1 million deaths. Or, you know, you're disrespectful to the dead. You know, how dare you? So that's, I keep the taxi meter running. I said, like, if the taxi drove into a ditch and it got in an accident, and the taxi meter's running, you come back a couple of weeks later and it's the fare is $50,000. That's what they're doing with the COVID stats. But that argument with the flu, now in the contrarian camp, part of the contrarian camp, I want to get your opinion on how to deconstruct this argument.
Yeah.
Because you've probably come across this. People say the disappearing flu. And the implication is, look, they're counting, the flu stats fell off of a cliff in 2020 and COVID stats shot up. So they're clearly counting the flu as COVID-19. Now, that might seem like a good opposition argument. How would you deconstruct that?
Yeah, I mean, that is very obvious that they said the flu went away 98% and the COVID numbers started to match it. And actually, I put it in, I can't remember which film, but I showed the CDC quietly came out in 2020 and admitted that, or maybe it's 2021. Yeah, sorry, it was around June or July 2021. The CDC came out and admitted that their PCR test can't tell the difference between influenza A, B, or COVID-19. So they instructed that they're going to use a new kind of test 7 months from then. Now, your first question would be, if you already know it doesn't count, it can't tell the difference, why are you going to use it for 7 more months? You know what I mean? If a car manufacturer said, oh my God, the tires are falling off our car, so we're only going to sell it for 7 more months, you would stop the production immediately. So there is a good argument for that. But the problem is there is no influenza A or B either. These are just PCR tests finding normal genetic, tiny genetic fragments found in everybody's snot, found in bacteria. In fact, Dr. Cowan's friend ran a search in the genetic database that virologists use and found one of the primer sequences that this test is looking for matched 98 human sequences and 98 bacterial and fungal sequences that are already known. And they say, well, this is a novel coronavirus never before seen. So how the hell can your test be looking for little strands that are already known in 190 things found in everyone's boogers? This is a scam. This is fraud.
So the most people believe that whether it's a PCR test or a lateral flow test, and a lot of people think that, oh, the antigen test, it's actually better than the PCR test, whatever. Look, they think that how the people view technology is that within that PCR test or within that lateral flow antigen test, there's a copy there of the genomic sequence of COVID-19, and all they're doing is matching the sample to what they found in your snot up your nose with the swab, and they're matching them, and it came back as a match. That's what most people think. That's how they think this technology works. How does it actually work, Steve?
Yeah, exactly. And like the antigen tests, they're just looking for an antibody, which is a globulin. If you guys probably ran the story on UK Column, if everyone remembers, British school kids were putting lemon juice on those tests to get quarantined and sent home.
Yes.
Because they were given false positives. And that test has gone positive on blueberries, Spanish river water, papayas, goats, kiwis, tap water out of the sink. They ran it on blank tests that hadn't even touched anyone's mucus and got positives. And antibodies, we got into that in the film. They're not specific. They don't mean you have a virus in your body. They bind to all sorts of things, or they don't bind to anything. They're meaningless. They don't mean you're sick. They don't mean there's anything wrong with you or in you. They're basically glue that when you have poison in your system, they help glue your cells together, and they also help with wounds like scabbing and healing. They expand in certain environments. But antibody scientists, they control it in the lab. If they change the pH level from acidic to more of an alkaline or add certain detergents, they can get these things to not bind to anything. So these things are meaningless. Testing for that is meaningless. And it's the same with these PCR tests. See, that we get into it in the film, because they've never isolated any of these viruses, they make up the genome for them in silico, it's called. They make it up in a computer by putting together millions of little tiny strands of normal genetic material and then making the computer make this genome. But see, the thing their PCR test is looking for was used to make the fake genome in the first place. So you see what I'm saying? It's a rigged test.
So it's looking for
because they used it to make the genome in the first place.
so it's a computer software that's referencing another computer software AI algorithm created genomic sequence and so forth. So it's a whole chain of derivative representations of a genomic sequence, but not exactly a genetic copy of a virus found in nature. Is that right? Is that right?
Yeah, because there isn't one found in nature. There's never been one found in nature. And that's why they make up the genome. And that's the problem, is since they're making it up, they're using PCR to make it up. Now, without getting into the science of what a PCR does with reverse transcripting, you know, people get lost. All you need to know is if you take the number 1 and double it, you get the number 2, right? If you do that 29 times, you're going to end up with a number 520 million or something like that. That's a PCR cycle. All it does is take a molecule sequence of nucleotides, like let's say ACCG. And if you double that, you'll have 2 A's, 4 C's, and 2 G's. You do that 29 times, you're going to have 500 million of each. You do that one more time, 30 cycles, that'll double to 1.2 billion. you do that 31 cycles, that doubles to 2.4 billion A's, C's, G's, and T's that aren't really there. The test is making them, and that these are called de novo sequences. So now when you've got a soup brew with all of these things that aren't there, and you, depending on where you want to start and stop that cut, the computer has, it can make any sequence it wants. Anything. You could put a banana in there, a pineapple, and you could take your boogers and make a banana genome. It'll do it because it has every sequence to work with. And because since they never have found a wild virus in the wild or in somebody's lungs or sputum or anybody, because they made the genome using PCR techniques instead of what are called Sanger and Maxim Gilbert, like if you did find a wild virus, if one really existed, you wouldn't find its genome with PCR. You would use these two other methods that have been around since the 70s because PCR can't put together a 30,000 genome long sequence. It does little short ones like 18 to 300. So what they did is they just put a bunch of normal, you know, dead monkey kidney tissue, boogers from a person, sick person, bovine calf serum, which is actually, it's just the blood from a cow fetus, which has genetic material, sometimes milk. They break that all down with chemicals like trypsin, amphotericin, gentamicin that break it down into tons of tiny fragments. Then they run PCRs on those. And it, like, you know, if you do 30 cycles, like I said, there's billions of de novo nucleotides that aren't really there. They're just copies so you can detect them. Well, then they use those little strands and put them together to make the genome they want that it kind of looks like the last one they made the same way. Like they made SARS off of that and they modeled SARS off of a bat one. And they, you know, that once they have one fake genome, they make the next one, like they tell the computer, get it close to this, you know, but it doesn't always get close. Sometimes it makes some errors and they call that a variant. That's what, you know, these, the COVID variants, everyone was scared, Omicron, and all that. This is what happens. If they took your boogers and my boogers and both did a PCR on them, you might have a little different genetic material in yours than mine, and the petri dishes might have been a little different. So it's still going to put all those sequences together to make what they want it to, but it'll be a little different for yours. So yours will be a variant. And that's why I think there's something like 4 million variants right now, because they've done this, you know, 4 million times and everyone gets a different result. Omicron was even funnier, as Dr. Kaufman pointed out, because the old PCR or the PCR test for COVID originally was looking for three different primer sequences, which are these spike proteins, but it just means three little chains of nucleotides that come out of the fake 30,000 genome. You know, so they got the 30,000 genome and they say, we'll take these 18, those 200 and those 300 from somewhere in there, and that'll be the PCR test calibration. But then what they did for Omicron is apparently some doctor in, I don't know, was it South Africa where they said that broke out?
Yeah.
Some doctor ran a test on a sick person. She thought he had COVID systems and just symptoms and assumed it's COVID, but he only got two out of the three sequences that in the PCR, which used to be a negative. So she said, oh, that's an Omicron variant. So then they use the same test. And if you got two out of three, now you got Omicron. This is what they're doing.
Yeah.
But they're not testing for COVID. There's no such thing. That test can't look for COVID. It can only look for little sequences of ACGT, you know, nucleotides in a certain order, in a certain row. And it can't look for COVID or any other virus because no virus in history has ever been isolated, genetically sequenced properly, and found to be a real thing with a real genome. So you can't make a test. I say it to people like this, and radio is perfect. I'm holding something in my hand right now, and this is great because none of you can see it. Design a test, Patrick, for me that will tell if what's on your desk is what I'm holding in my hand. Do you have any questions?
Yeah, I got a test for that.
You know what I mean?
It's called a PCR test. So
yes, you couldn't possibly design a test unless you know what's in my hand. What color is it? What does it do? What size is it? What does it look like? How big is it? What is it? You know, you could never know if what's on your desk is what I'm holding in my hand unless you have what is in my hand to make the test for.
Yeah.
This is what PCR is. And they admit it. I showed in the film, the CDC said we didn't have any such thing as COVID-19. So instead, we took some known titer stuff from a guy who had lung cancer back in the 70s. And then bovine calf serum DNA, RNA, and then those two together were used to make the PCR for COVID-19. So apparently a brand new novel coronavirus is the same as some old guy's lung cancer they've been using for years in cell cultures with bovine calf serum RNA that they've been using. That's how they made the test, because they admitted we don't have what's in Steve's hand. So we just made these two tests. And if it comes positive, then we're saying what's in Steve's hand is this.
Oh. What science? What science? It's inspirational. Look, we're going to take a short break here. I'm with Steve Falconer. He's the voice of Space Busters and The End of Germ Theory. It's a featured documentary film, independent film up at 21stCenturyWire.com, also on Odyssey as well. We're going to take a short break here with TNT, and we'll be right back after these messages. I'm Patrick Henningsen. Stay right there.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
Weather-wise, it's quite quiet right now. As a matter of fact, the western part of the United States is very cool. We also have a lot of cool air across Europe this upcoming week. As far as the tropical season, we've had a couple of systems in the western Pacific, but overall, the western Pacific, where most of your tropical activity occurs, has been running way the heck below normal this year. The Atlantic basin is near normal, but their hurricane season really gets cranking a little bit later, and we're expecting a big Atlantic hurricane season this year, so much so. We do know that they are going to try to weaponize that weather event when the hurricanes start coming. In any case, the upcoming week looks cool in the northeast part of the United States. The western part of the United States looks hot in the central part of the United States. Northwest China, eastern Siberia, and Scandinavia into Europe is actually cooler than normal, along with northern Australia. This has been WeatherBell.com meteorologist Joe Bastardi for today's news talk. And remember, enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
In times of fear, World Vision is there for the most vulnerable. For the last 70 years, we've been standing with kids and families through natural disasters, war, and disease, delivering life-saving aid and helping rebuild lives. And with every act of courage, faith, and love, we do more than just stop the spread of fear. We replace it with hope. Learn more at worldvision.org.
If you want the jibby jab, all right, enough, then you've come to the wrong station. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to TNT, Today's News Talk. I'm Patrick Henningsen, your host. We're cruising into the final segment of the final hour here on this beautiful Tuesday. We're broadcasting live globally wherever you are in the world. Thank you so much for joining us. We're really on the controversial topic here. We're on the third rail of the COVID debate, which is germ theory versus terrain theory. I know this is somewhat of a paradigm, somewhat of a dialectic, but our guest we have on the line right now, his name is Steve Falconer. He's, among other things, the voice of a number of good independent films that are on Space Busters, a popular channel here. The latest one's called The End of Germ Theory. It's 2 hours and 34 minutes long. I highly recommend it if you want to get into this topic, and if you want to go that far on the discussion to actually challenge the existence of viruses. Do they actually exist? A lot of people will argue and say, of course they do. How could you say otherwise? But some of the points made in this film, narrated here by Steve Falconer, blow massive holes through the official orthodoxy of modern virology. Now, Steve, when I look at your films, you know, like one of the most powerful images in the other film, one of your early ones as well, was the image, the microscopic image of a cell bursting. And when the cell bursts, all this material comes out of the cell, it ruptures. And it's a powerful image, microscopic image. And so modern virology and modern mainstream medicine and pharmacology will say that what I'm looking at there is what happens after the virus penetrates into the cell and takes over and starts to do the kind of like the Borg in Star Trek, starts altering its DNA, and then it replicates and replicates, and all of a sudden it explodes, and then you have a cytokine storm, and that's why you get sick. But you've got a totally different explanation for that same phenomenon. In other words, Steve, it's the same with antibodies. You know, when we're talking about looking at antibodies and phages, the killer cells and whatnot under a microscope, we're all looking at the same thing, but we're describing it in a different way, using different terminology to describe what we're looking at. I see this as the crux of the problem, Steve.
But it is.
Go ahead.
Yeah, you're right. And the thing is, where the confusion sets in is we're not saying that that particle that they're showing you under an electron microscope doesn't exist. No one's claiming that's not a real particle. It's there. We can see it. What we're saying is there's no evidence ever in the history of the world that that particle went into a cell, multiplied magically, caused a cell to burst open, exploded out into a million copies, and flew out all over the environment and got everyone sick. There's no proof, and there's a reason for that. The film footage you were talking about that you saw in an earlier film, that's done with what's called a light microscope. Now, that can zoom about 20,000 times. There was a guy called Gaston Naissance. He made a thing called the somatoscope. We still don't know how he built it. His went over 30,000 zoom and could study live moving particles, much 10,000 times more than we can amplify with our light microscopes. Now, as Dr. Kaufman told me, he thinks that thing still exists. If we reverse engineered it, we'd have a wonderful tool to start studying this biology while it's moving. The problem with an electron microscope, it can zoom in, I think, 100,000 times. Don't quote me, much more than a light microscope. But it can only take still pictures. And in order to do it, you have to kill the cell tissue, starve it, freeze it, poison it with even more chemicals, glutaraldehyde, formaldehyde, slice it up into thin pieces, put it in a wax resin, and then burn the thing at a high heat under the microscope and dye it with uranium and other chemicals, because the light microscope isn't looking at the tissue. It's looking at the dye you put on the tissue sample with metal. That's what you're seeing there. You're seeing light bouncing off metal stains. See what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So because these particles are too small, when you saw that video of a cell breaking open, that's just what's called lysis or necrosis or apoptosis. There are many reasons cells just burst open and all their stuff explodes out. It's not viruses coming out. But that, if you zoom in, you still can't see these particles that they're showing us. They're even smaller than all the juice and little things you see flying out of that moving video. If you zoom in on that and that and that, you see they can't get in there to see what they're calling a virus particle. So the only way they can do it is electron microscopes, which is obviously a still picture. But you've already poisoned and killed the cell culture anyway with amphotericin, gentamicin. You've starved it of nutrients. Then you've done these other 10 things to prepare it for the slide. And then you look at it, well, you have no idea even what you're looking at, and there's no proof that it came into that cell and exploded out, or that it was there after you poisoned and starved it, because it's not moving. You know, as I showed in the film, a guy standing outside his door with a key, just a still picture, and asking, did this guy just come home and he's about to put the key in the door, or is he leaving and about to put it in his pocket? You have no idea unless you see the footage moving. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem with biology in general. All our sciences are studying dead things to try to understand life. But we don't have the technology to look deep enough to look at cellular biology, because it's too small and it moves, you know, and you've only got a little slide and a little this. And so it's very hard to study something that is allegedly 150 nanometers, which is like 0.00015 of a millimeter. You can't, you know, this is like the head of a pin and then smaller. So we don't have the technology to see those things moving. So this is all theory. All germ theory is, as you said, it's a theory, because no one has ever seen any of this stuff happen, ever.
And just to explain the fundamental basic difference between germ theory and terrain theory, just boil that down to simple two definitions.
Yeah, and this is actually a good lead into something else that we need to talk about. But germ theorists believe that illnesses are caused by viruses or bacteria that enter into people's body and make them sick and then multiply and explode out and then fly through the air or the water and then get into other people's bodies and make them sick. The terrain theory people, you can't even put a label on that because there are dozens of different alternative sciences in terrain. See, also this is, people confuse terrain. A lot of people say this, they say, the germ doesn't matter because if your terrain is healthy, it can handle the germ. You'll hear this argument a lot.
And yes,
say, no,
yes.
There isn't a germ to handle, whether your terrain's awesome or shit and you drink Coca-Cola and eat cheeseburgers, that doesn't matter. There's no germ or bacteria that's going to harm you or virus. So it's terrain theory doesn't mean that your terrain can take care of germs and viruses. It means you're getting sick because you're poisoned. Your terrain is poisoned and sick from environmental toxins, stress and worry, pH imbalances due to stress and worry, many other things like bioresonance. There's some other weird stuff. So it has nothing to do with your terrain is healthy enough to combat a fictional virus or a bacteria. It means when you're sick because your body is either deficient in certain minerals, vitamins, the pH balance is too acidic, or you're poisoned with toxins, you know, environmental toxins for this, that, and the other. That's really what terrain is. And this is what a lot of people, this is the problem that everyone gets. If you go into a court of law and they arrest somebody and say, you're on trial for murdering so-and-so, right? The prosecution, it's their job to prove with evidence beyond a reasonable doubt that you killed so-and-so. That's the prosecution's job, right? They made the claim. They have to prove it. They don't say that the defense, well, we don't have any evidence against your client, so you need to go out and find the real killer and prove they did it, or else we're putting them in jail anyway. You know, that's not how things work. But in germ theory, it's the same. Everyone says, okay, well, you claim that these aren't viruses and bacteria, and we proved it. So what is it? Until you can tell me what really causes illness, then we're just going to believe the nonsense, right? They're doing the same exact thing. They're telling, it's not our job. We're not the one claiming that viruses and bacteria cause illness and causing everyone to take injections, you know, the terrain camp. They're claiming it, so they have to prove it. We don't have to prove what it really is.
Yeah, so you're just asking for, you know, show me the empirical evidence to validate or back up your theory that these are viruses doing this. So vaccinology, the pseudoscience, I'm saying that not in a flippant way. It's the term vaccinology is such a bogus professional term, but the vaccine development is based on what? It's built on the back of germ theory, right?
Well, it is. Yeah, it's built on the ancient belief that you can somehow poison yourself in smaller amounts and make yourself immune to poisoning, which is that's nonsense, you know, that you can do that with alcohol. It's not that you don't get poisons. It's that you build up enzymes. You know, someone who drinks two bottles of wine a day, they could drink two bottles and not get as poisoned and drunk as someone who doesn't drink and has a glass of wine. They still get the same amount of poisoning. It's just that the one has enzymes built up to deal with it and the other doesn't because they never drink. You know, this is, if people want to find out what really makes you ill, go read my friend Don Lester's book with David Parker, What Really Makes You Ill. There's 1,100 pages that'll tell you all about what's really going on, you know. And these people aren't given a voice anywhere. But that, again, like I'm saying, the germ people are claiming that these germs and viruses cause disease and that their vaccine will make you make these special magic antibodies that are only specific to this virus or germ that will make you immune in the future, right? But it's their claim, not ours. So we don't have to prove what really causes disease, if not germs and viruses, because they're the one making the claim, not us. But there are many explanations, and I think I will do a film on that as to what is it then? Because a lot of people do want to know, and it's a good question. But that's like asking the defense attorney to find the murderer if it's not your client. It's not our job. Their job is, you accused us of murder, you prove it. You know what I mean? And that's the trouble we're kind of having is, people are like, well, if I don't know what it really is, then I won't listen to that it isn't this, you know?
Yeah. So, that's- so, So you get asked tons of questions from people, and you know, so what are the top questions that people ask you that you normally just say, look, watch this film, but what are the most common ones that they're coming at you with? We got about say 5 minutes left.
Only sure.
Give you the floor for a quick fire, a bullet point list there.
Sure. Well, that's actually why I made this film, because I made about 18 films over the last 2.5 years on the subject. And then people kept coming at me with these same 10 questions. Well, what about the Spanish flu? What about polio? What about the measles? What about chickenpox parties? How come my dad and I got sick, but my mom and I didn't? Or, you know, how come two people in my house got ill at the same time or seemed to? What about STDs? You know, and they go down the same list. And I got sick of saying, well, I answered that at 20 minutes into that film, and I answered that at 50, you know, like I got tired of pointing to all these films. So that's why I made this final film. I said, I'm going to answer all these questions in one film. But I got thinking, you know, if you do listen to people like Dr. Kaufman or Cowan or Sam Bailey or, any, you know, any of the people doing this, Dr. Vollmer, they always say back in 1918, they did experiments on 100 healthy people, you know, exposing them to the germs of sick people. And no one got sick. And you hear them say that, and it goes in one ear and out the other. So I thought, I'm going to show you. I'm going to use your eyes instead of your ears. Look, I'm going to show you the study and that everyone talks about quickly and blows off in detail. We'll walk through the study so you can see it, because I thought it's going to be more powerful if you see it for yourself instead of hearing it secondhand. You know, secondhand information we dismiss a little better than firsthand. And then as I got into that, I thought, well, hell, you know what? I'm going to actually show you all these papers. And I didn't. The film was running over 3.5 hours almost of getting up there. So about 45 minutes went to the cutting room floor. I could have shown a lot more than is in that film, but, you know, nobody would sit through a 3-hour film. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot more ammunition where that came from. I just used a couple out of a large arsenal of information that debunks all of this.
Yeah.
So that was why I made this film, and I didn't actually expect anyone to take notice. I still thought a 2.5-hour film was too long for most people.
Yeah. I mean, the part that that I thought was very powerful at the end, when you touch on the antigen antibody issue, you know, you're talking about, you know, they're saying that antibodies are specific to certain viruses and your body has this memory. That is a theory. That's not necessarily a fact, but there is also the terrain camp, you could say, would say that exact same process you're talking about, that's the detoxification process that your body is doing. It's cleaning up, and expelling that is purging. This is symptoms of the flu, for instance, and so forth. Again, we're talking about the same phenomenon, both camps, but using different language and different labels and different attribution of blame. Does that make sense?
Yeah, exactly. And that's one of the problems we have. Most people, vaccines kill a lot of people, but nothing like iatrogenic medicine, normal prescription, and even non-prescription over-the-counter drugs. They kill way more people every year than even vaccines, because the body is fevering. People don't understand. We call healing illness because of this germ theory. We say, I'm sick. I'm sick with the flu. I caught a cold. I'm sick with a cold. But that's not really what's going on. The fevers are increased metabolic activity and chemical reactions involved when the body's breaking down and eliminating built-up toxins. You know, it helps to liquefy toxic sludge so it can get rid of it. And we're told, oh, and it doesn't feel good. Like, we know it doesn't feel good to vomit and diarrhea and have a fever, but that's purging. And so we go out and take these prescription drugs to block the fever that's trying to remove it and to stop the symptoms, you know. So then that's what all of this allopathic medicine, they're not interested in what caused your illness. They're interested in getting rid of the feeling of the symptoms so they can keep you on the medicine, coming back buying more. You know, like when you have a headache, if you're dehydrated and you take aspirin, it didn't cure the headache. You just don't feel it. You're still dehydrated. You know what I mean? Or if you have a pain from a sports injury, the aspirin or the Panadol or, you know, ibuprofen, it just takes the feeling away. You're still hurt. And that's how allopathic medicine deals with everything. And that's where a lot of these deaths, you look at rabies, you know, people, that's one of them I didn't put in the film. It made the cutting room floor, but People say, well, what about rabies? It's the most deadly one of it. And you say, oh, is it? Because when you look at rabies, for starters, it's one of the only alleged viruses or germs where normally they say the symptoms come on 2 to 14 days, but it has a 1 to 3 month incubation period. So 30 to 90 days, nothing happens except some pain and irritation at the bite mark. Surprise, surprise. Why would you be irritated when a dog bites you? Like, of course you would be there. But what do? The first thing they do to treat rabies is you have to go out and get 4 rabies shots within 12 days. That's how they start curing rabies.
Yeah.
That's like a guy having sex with a woman, and then for the next week, he puts a condom on 4 times to not get her pregnant afterward.
that's just about the right place to leave this conversation. But look, we're going to talk more in future. Steve Falconer, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Patrick. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much for having me.
Much appreciated. Thank you for joining us. Look, we're going to take a break now to the next show. This is the end of the program, but thank you for joining us on TNT, Today's News Talk.